The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. Today it is Tuesday, the 31st of March. It's the last day of the month. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. It's great that you choose us. Good to have you on board, especially perhaps maybe if you work in education and you don't get an opportunity to listen to the show too much. It's great to have you on board during your Easter break. The lines are open for you to get involved in the conversation and we encourage you to do so. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call either on 074 91 25,000, and you can also email the show comments at highlandradio.com. Right, let's have a look at what's making the front of and inside some of the newspapers this morning. And the government may soon urge the public to conserve energy and fuel supplies due to the war in the Middle East, Taoiseach Simon Harris has said. However, he ruled out any plans to introduce pandemic-style travel restrictions as the energy crisis deepens worldwide. Mr. Harris said it may well be necessary again for the government to give advice on conserving energy, akin to the messaging around saving energy during the early part of Russia's invasion of Ukraine that led to a global gas shortage. And I think many people anyway at this point are, because we have to pay to replace the fuel, are dropping the temperature on the thermostat down a degree or two and praying for a good spell of warm weather. Well, Mr. Harris said while the current energy crisis is very different to the COVID crisis, he warned it was very challenging. It was a very challenging situation too. There are no plans currently to adapt people's travel schedules, he said. Mr. Harris said that people would change their travel habits anyway due to the increase in price, and he defended the government's recent intervention on petrol and diesel prices. So what's happening around the world? Not that necessarily it's an indicator of what might happen here, but I just thought it interesting. So in Germany, they have implemented a temporary climate and energy speed limit of 100 kilometres on the previously unrestricted stretches of the Autobahn, which is quite a change. In Italy, they've reduced highway speed limits to 110 kilometres per hour, this to optimise fuel efficiency across the transport fleet. In France, several major cities, including Paris and Lyon, have implemented car-free Sundays to curb urban fuel consumption. South Korea is encouraging a weekly no-drive day. In Pakistan, they've mandated a four-day week for all federal employees. In Belgium, they're formalising a nationwide right to a four-day work week. So a lot of stuff is probably being accelerated, and we saw that during the pandemic here. Areas in work and education that were probably going to end up there, but it's being fast-tracked now. In Spain, they've mandated that air conditioning in public buildings and large commercial spaces be set no lower than 20 degrees Celsius. In Japan, they've reinvigorated the Cool Biz campaign, requiring government offices to maintain higher thermostat settings and allowing casual attire to compensate. In India, they've limited how much gas is put into gas bottles as well. Sorry, that's in the Maldives or the Maldives. Maldives. They've introduced a half-fill policy for LPG cylinders to ensure that limited supply of cooking gas reaches a large number of households. So they're just some of the measures that have already been introduced around the world. It depends where you get your oil from. But if this keeps going, thanks to Mr. Donald Trump, we're all probably going to be faced with massive increases in our fuel and also restrictions then how we choose to use it, whether Simon Harris, he probably doesn't want people storing fuel now. That's how it works, you see, because if he was to start talking of, you know, mandates of certain things, people might start storing the fuel themselves or what have you, and they want to avoid that. So no harm to him. I'm not saying he's lying, but he's not going to confirm anything at this point because every action has a reaction and people could start, you know, hoarding and that type of thing. Obviously, this is a story we covered extensively on the news bulletins yesterday. A 49-year-old man has been charged with the murder of Dennis Donaldson at a sitting of the Special Criminal Court. This is in the Irish Times. Donaldson, a former member of the Provisional IRA and senior Sinn Féin official, was exposed as an MI5 informant months before he was shot dead in Donegal in 2006. Antoine Duffy, also known as Anton, with an address at Brad Kincastle, County Donegal, was charged with his murder and with four offences under the Firearms Act 1925. He was also charged with the attempted murder of Liam Copeland McGinley. Gardaí in the Donegal division arrested Duffy at Casement Aerodrome following his extradition from Scotland on foot of a European arrest warrant. Duffy was charged with the murder of Donaldson on a date unknown between April 3rd and April 4th, 2006, at Clochore, Dookery, County Donegal. He was also charged with one count of possession of a shotgun with intent to endanger life and one count of possession of ammunition with intent. The attempted murder charge related to Liam Copeland McGinley happened on November 19th, 2007, near Churchill in County Donegal. That's another case that you might be familiar with. Duffy was also charged with one count of possession of a shotgun with intent to endanger life and one count of possession of ammunition with intent. Donaldson, a senior Sinn Féin official for many years, was shot dead in a remote cottage in southwest Donegal in April of 2006. The court approved a request for Duffy to be assigned legal aid and he was remanded in custody to appear in person on April 13th. So there you go. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and still plenty of trouble and strife in RTE, and the Irish Daily Mail reports on that. RTE journalists are in open revolt against their bosses after they overwhelmingly rejected the strategy to reform the broadcaster. A letter to members of the National Union of Journalists at RTE detailed that 89% voted no confidence in the future strategy, which was drafted to secure a major tax payer bailout in 2024. The result of the poll of roughly 35% of the 330 NUJ members at the station matches that of a ballot by SIPDU members, but also rejected the new strategy, which aims to reduce staff by hundreds and outsource production to the private sector. The latest confidence motion warned the strategy is placing in jeopardy the long-term future of RTE as a public service broadcaster. On to the Irish Sun now, and e-cigarettes, long touted as a way of stopping smoking, are likely to cause lung and mouth cancer, scientists claim. Their vapour may contain tumour-causing chemicals leading to DNA change and tissue inflammation. Now, they've been around for a long time, but they've probably only been around long enough now where we're starting to get some data on the impact of, I suppose, burning something and inhaling it directly into your lungs. Experts arrived at the findings after reviewing studies on mice exposed to vape aerosol. An Australian team at the University of New South Wales, Sydney, said only studies in humans will reveal the true risk. If there is risk at all, but I presume we have to presume there is. Professor Becky Freeman said vaping is not a safe alternative to smoking for non-smokers. And I think it was always really labelled as potentially safer rather than outright safe, if you get where I'm coming from. And a Meath man believes he's found possibly Ireland's oldest unopened jar of homemade jam after he uncovered the 50-year-old conserve whilst involved in a house clearing. It said it didn't kill him. Now, I mean, that wouldn't be the my litmus test as to whether or not it was safe to eat, whether you died from it or not. But anyway, Finbar Murray was clearing out cupboards in his late aunt's house when he found jars of homemade raspberry and strawberry jam dating back to 1976. And after braving the taste, the almost half a century old jam, he declared it was perfect. The finds were made while Finbar was clearing out his family's house, which lives on 200 acres near Navan. So it begs the question, what is the oldest thing you've ever eaten? What is the most out-of-date thing you've ever eaten? Now, we certainly wouldn't suggest that you do so, but this fella from me did, so maybe you did. Maybe it was on purpose or accident. I definitely have had a go at sort of 5 or 6 year old mustard, because I really fancied it and it hadn't been opened and it seemed fine at the time. And I think a lot of these best before dates are because you have to put best before dates on, don't you? But anyway, maybe you've got a story from your family where someone ate something that was very, very old, or maybe you haven't opened it yet and you have an old tin of beans from 1963. Who's to say? Anything like that at all, let me know. And I welcome on to the programme Dr. Paul Redmond, Associate Research Professor with the Economic and Social Research Institute. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Morning.
Now, we're speaking in the context of a study which found that young workers may not be getting the full benefit of the minimum wage increases. This is a report from yourselves. So explain that headline to us a little bit further.
Well, it's not quite. I mean, the focus of the research is to look at whether young workers or just minimum wage workers in general are likely to lose their jobs when the minimum wage goes up. So I guess the headline finding is that that doesn't happen. So what we do is we look at minimum wage workers before minimum wage increases, and then we follow them like 3 and then 6 months later to see if they're still working. And we find that the minimum wage increases that occurred. They occurred every year since 2016. They did not increase the likelihood that minimum wage workers lost their jobs. Now, the separate part of the study, we look at what's called sub-minimum youth wages. So if you're age less than 20, your employer can, if they wish, pay you below the full adult rate. So for example, if you're 18, you can get 80%. If you're 19, you can get 90%. And what we do also is we look and we see, well, let's take an example. Somebody age 18, when they turn 19, they're automatically entitled to an increase in their wage. So we examine whether these workers are likely to lose their jobs when they turn 19 and their employer has to pay them more. And we find that again, they're on average, they're not. But I think to your point, what you're talking about there is another finding in the study, and that relates to when we're talking about these youth wage rates. Historically, and even currently, they're rarely used. And what I mean is that employers that employ young workers, even if they could pay them the sub-minimum youth rates, they're more likely to pay them the full rate or above. However, what we find in this study is that the incidence of these sub-minimum youth wages are increasing. So it looks as though employers are increasingly turning, let's say, to sub-minimum youth wages. And it's possible that they're doing this, or they're using sub-minimum youth wages as an attempt to, let's say, keep labor costs lower as the minimum wage gets higher.
Yes, but I suppose what also will be factored in over time is what you get for what you pay as well at the same time, right? So let's just say a company purged those who all of a sudden came on to the higher rate and employed those on the lower rate. I mean, if it's affecting output and or a customer experience or what have you, then it's a false economy, isn't it? So it might, just rectify itself rather than being abused. But maybe, of
Yeah,
course,
I
that
wouldn't.
doesn't cover all sectors.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say it's abused. I wouldn't like. I mean, we have some minimum youth wages, and employers are legally entitled to pay them. And as I said, like even now, the incidence has increased. Most employers will actually pay either the full rate or above, even to young workers. So, I wouldn't say that it could be abused. But if
But
you
you
pay a
wouldn't, I presume
sub-minimum.
you wouldn't have commissioned a report unless there was at least anecdotal evidence out there that the system was being abused.
No, that's not correct.
Right.
That's absolutely
No,
not
it's a
correct.
question, not an accusation. It's
Yeah,
just a
no,
question.
that's fine. But the question, well, it isn't correct because it was actually the Low Pay Commission that commissioned this report.
Right.
And what their role is, they actually advise government each year on what the minimum wage should be. Now, when you're talking about minimum wage policy, there's lots of, let's say, ingredients going into these recommendations. But in minimum wage policy in Ireland and elsewhere, what's really important is that you want, and what the remit, let's say, of the Low Pay Commission is, it's they try and recommend the minimum wage that helps as many low-paid workers as possible without creating negative employment effects. So this is why really we look at this, we do this research to try and keep an eye on employment effects. Now, in this research specifically, we look just at whether minimum wage workers are likely to lose their jobs. There are other things that could happen. Like we mentioned, the sub-minimum youth wages. Hours are another factor, let's say. So, and we have, we, well, we don't look at it specifically in this report. We've a lot of previous research and recent research that shows that that looks like the channel of adjustment, let's say. So, while employers don't seem to react by letting people go, hours worked tend to decline. But again, just to your point on what you get, all of this is taken in the context of, the Low Pay Commission was established in 2015. They came in at a time where the minimum wage hadn't increased in almost a decade. But since 2015, there's been yearly increases. So it's increased by over 60% at this stage. So even, and that applies to the full rate, but obviously, given that the sub-minimum youth wages are a percentage of the full rate, it also applies to these sub-minimum youth wages. So there have been fairly significant increases over the last decade.
Yeah, for sure. And it paints a positive picture, doesn't it, of the impact of these wage increases, these minimum wage increases, and them not necessarily having a very obvious negative impact on employees.
Yeah, you're right, it does. I mean, if you were to find, let's say, widespread significant job losses, that would be concerning. And that so this research factors into, let's say, the decision-making process of the Low Pay Commission to try and look at whether the minimum wage increases that were recommended did cause negative impact. So in that sense, you're absolutely right. It is a positive picture. The one thing I'd say is that, again, when we're interpreting these findings, I suppose it's in the context of the period that we study is kind of characterized by quite strong economic growth, and unemployment was really low as well. So while we find no effects during this period, it's possible and maybe likely that if you were to look at it, let's say, during a recession and if the same policies happened, it could be quite different. But you're absolutely right. It is positive in terms of employment.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, when the Low Pay Commission is making an argument for increases, the counter-argument would be exactly what you've disproved in this report to some extent. I mean, obviously, it's really quite broad. But it will be interesting to see when times change, and they will change inevitably, but lots of things will change. Okay, anything else in this report that I didn't ask you about that you think's worthy of mention?
I think we've covered everything. It's quite comprehensive.
Listen, thanks so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. Look after yourself. Dr. Paul Redmond, Associate Research Professor with the Economic and Social Research Institute. That study carried out on behalf of the Low Pay Commission, and it found no increase in job losses despite the minimum wage going up every year since 2016. And the system it found is not being particularly abused. Right, let me get to some of your comments that have been coming in over this morning and yesterday. Greg, my mother died 2 years ago. Yesterday, a letter arrived addressed to her stating she'd been selected for jury duty and she must reply when requested or risk receiving a fine of up to €500. Why are these organisations not joined up when a person has passed away? Surely a check of PPS number would help avoid this happening. It's very frustrating, not to mention insensitive. Indeed, and I think you'd still get letters, or you'd still see letters coming in for people in my life who've passed away, and sometimes it'd give me a chuckle or remind me in a nice way, but it's, for others it feels very insensitive and hurtful. But I think the risk then of a fine, that would actually really annoy me, and you do wonder why there is not more joined up thinking in that regard. What an absolute farce. Petrol stations bang the price up, then bring it down by 20 cent and 15 cent, and it's still way higher than it should be. Yeah, indeed, I'm seeing diesel now, even with the government's intervention, up at 206, 207. Petrol, not an awful long way behind it. I mean, listen, thankfully we did have that reduction because, I mean, we're very close to it being blooming unaffordable at this stage, aren't we? Right, let's go to the AGSI conference. Sergeant Tom O'Griefa is AGSI member of the Donegal branch. He joins him now. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for your time, Tom. Now, 165 Garda sergeants and inspectors are attending the 48th annual delegate conference in Westport this week. What is the mood heading into this or at this conference, Tom?
We're in a moment of change within the Garda Síochána. There's a lot of issues being discussed here during the few days, and a very important issues are being discussed.
Yeah, and it is a really quite an important opportunity, isn't it, to, I suppose, get a lot of people in the one room and tease this stuff out.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. What are some of the they're all big motions, don't get me wrong, but what do you think will be some of the big talking points over the next while, Tom?
Well, we and the Donegal branch are bringing a motion to conference in relation to a review of the civilianisation of an Garda Síochána, which we believe is a very important motion to bring forward.
Tell us more about that motion, Tom.
Well, since 2017, there's been an increase in Garda staff numbers in the Garda Síochána. The intention of this was to reduce the administrative burden on frontline members. And from our experience as frontline supervisors, sergeants and inspectors, that hasn't happened. Despite the growth in Garda staff, a lot of admin duties still fall to frontline members, particularly sergeants and inspectors. Now, we want to be clear about this. This motion does not question the value or professionalism of Garda staff members who are essential a modern policing service. In fact, if anything, we need more Garda staff members along with more Gardaí. But at present, a lot of sergeants and inspectors are stuck behind computers, sitting at their desks, doing admin and similar tasks.
And that sounds like a relatively easy situation to resolve. It is relatively new, right? There is always going to be teething problems. It shouldn't be beyond the powers that be to sort that out.
And that's what we're asking for, to review to see where the system can be changed to have a more efficient system in place.
Now, also, a lot of coverage today about social media abuse of Gardaí increasing and some commentary that it's actually a barrier to recruitment because people are sort of saying, I wouldn't mind that job, but I ain't signing up for that, if I could put it to you like that. How big a concern is that of you and your colleagues, Tom?
It is a massive concern, Greg. Yeah. We are seeing a large rise in the number of members approaching ACSI for support in relation to it. About 10 members have approached ACSI in the past couple of months looking for support. Members are being subject to targeted personal abuse, character assassination, and spreading rumours, false and vile and vexatious slurs online. And an issue we're seeing is doxing. Which is where members' home addresses are being revealed, their family details and their own personal details are being revealed online.
And I've seen a number of... Sorry, go ahead, Tom, please. I beg your pardon.
No, continue on.
You know, I've seen quite a bit of this going online, and I wouldn't like me or anyone associated with me to be a victim of it. And even if, and I'm not talking about any specific cases, but even if it is sort of elevated to a point where action may be taken, it actually seems to increase the level of abuse on any member that might try and elevate it. So clearly there are people who understand the law as it stands, or believe they do, and feel they can say anything about a serving member of the force, or let people know where they live for that matter. So this is a legislative issue, is it?
It would be, yeah. It's a health and safety issue within for our members. It is causing real stress and real damage to the men and women who work in the organisation, to their mental health. They're just being targeted simply for doing their jobs. The Commissioner's here today at our conference, and ACSI are asking the Commissioner to take three steps immediately to deal with this issue. The first one is to issue a clear policy on how members deal with agitators who record them and harass them while they're on duty. Secondly, we would be looking for a task force to be established to review the issue, similar to the one that was established to address threats against online threats against politicians, similar to the one that was headed up by former Garda Commissioner Noreen O'Sullivan. And thirdly, we'll be asking the Commissioner to work more closely with the social media platforms to make sure that this content is removed swiftly from their platforms. And we also want to ensure that members' well-being are being supported, and that supports are put in place for members affected by this online abuse.
Indeed. Another big issue, and it's across all ranks in the force, and that's the issue of suspension policies within An Garda Síochána. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'd all be familiar with many of these cases that can have very tragic consequences, even with perfectly innocent members of the force. Yet still, it has to come up and it has to be raised at consecutive conferences. Just outline the concerns the AGSI or some members have in relation to the suspension policies and what may or could be done.
Well, in respect to the current suspension policies, we have no confidence in the current suspension policies within regard to Síochána. Members are being suspended for a long period of time. There is no independent oversight, and we are asking for independent oversight for members who are suspended for a long period of time. sometimes when members are suspended and our investigation could take a long time to conclude, and we're looking for that to be reviewed. Mm. We're looking for that to be reviewed.
And finally, we've been talking about resources, and we often talk about Garda resources and how much pressure they're under. The EU presidency is going to compound that resources issue, no doubt.
Yeah, the EU presidency starting in July till the end of the year, and it will put pressure on an Garda Síochána because you'll be dealing with the EU presidency. But again, day-to-day policing does not stop. The minister was here yesterday, and he stated at our conference yesterday that 125 million of extra funding will be put in place to police the EU presidency, which is welcomed. Mm. But we will also be looking for further assurances that the adequate resources will be in place during this time.
Okay, and there's a lot at it, and there's a lot of motions, and I just wanted to pick out some that might have a particular interest to our listeners. Sergeant Tom O'Grifa, thank you so much for sparing your time this morning. I appreciate it. Just to get through some of your comments that have been coming in so far this morning, we were talking about a fella in County Meath who ate 50-year-old jam. Wouldn't advise it, but anyway, he did. I've eaten 6-year out-of-date bars of Kit Kat chocolate and a 4-year out-of-date Marmite. No ill effects whatsoever. I'm not too concerned about best before dates unless it's processed food such as chicken or ham. Marmite can be rough at the best of times, but eating it 4 or 5 years out of date, dodgy. All right, okay. Now, I'm welcoming onto the programme now Rhianna Bolton. Good morning to you, Rhianna. Rhianna, thank you so much for your time today.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me.
How are you keeping?
Yeah, good.
Okay, all things considered.
Yeah. Okay. We're doing as good as we can.
Right. Now, you are down in Crumlins Children's Hospital with your daughter, Billy. Talk to us about her condition.
So Billy was born with what's called an ileoatresia. So essentially her small and large bowel weren't connected at birth. And she was born with just a quarter of the small intestine that she should have been born with. So she's facing surgeries to rectify that and hopefully get her back to where she needs to be.
When did you find out that there were irregularities with Billy?
It was at our 20-week scan in Letterkenny. The sonographer wasn't quite satisfied with her bowel area, so sent us to Hollis Street for further investigations. And we had many scans down in Hollis Street until it was kind of confirmed and all the rest.
All right. So a stressful pregnancy for you, no doubt. It's tough at the best of times.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. And obviously then, you can tell an awful lot with scans, but did the full extent of Billy's condition become apparent after birth?
Yeah, so actually wasn't until she had her first surgery at 2 days old that they knew what they were actually facing. There was only so much they could see on the scans. They didn't know how much bowel she would have or anything until they actually got in and operated.
Yeah, and there's no one knows why this happens.
No, there's no reason for it. Essentially, they just separated while she was growing in the womb. And because they separated, neither of them were able to grow either side.
It's astonishing. And you found out in advance. Not every family does. Sometimes it only becomes apparent at birth. Is it because you had someone that particularly scrutinised the scans, Rhianna, or...?
Yeah, our sonographer Katrina in Letterkenny was incredible. We kind of owe it to her for referring us on, and she kept in touch throughout our pregnancy. Even if we weren't in with her for scans, she was constantly checking in. She was amazing.
Now, Billy was born 4 weeks early, and then very soon afterwards, 2 days, you mentioned, had to undergo surgery.
I mean,
she must have just been a tiny little thing to have to go through that.
Yeah, well, we were quite lucky with her weight. She wasn't as small as she probably was thinking she would be. She was 7 pounds when she was born, so she was a great weight to go for her surgery. There wasn't any concerns with her prematurity about the surgery, which was great for her.
Okay, so you had no complications even despite the fact that she was born early, which was good. No. And that surgery then was deemed successful, right?
The first surgery, it was successful, but it wasn't what we wanted. It wasn't what we had initially hoped would be like what was going to happen. There was a few different things that we were told could have happened, and this was kind of more of a long-term thing of us staying down here longer than we would have wanted to. But look, she's on the right road now, and it is what it is, and as long as it takes for her to get the care she needs and to get her back up home, we'll ride the wave.
Yeah, it's tough because you really have to decamp to Dublin, which is difficult.
Yeah, so we're currently living in the Ronald McDonald House, which is an incredible service as well. Like, we'd be lost without it. But it's hard because we have a two-year-old at home, so you're like splitting between the two and trying to juggle it all.
Yeah, I'm sure. And is Billy in hospital all of the time, or can she come home with you guys to your accommodation, or...?
Oh, no. She is in the high dependency unit in the neonatal ward. She hasn't left her four walls since she was brought in on the first day of her birth.
Unbelievable. So. And she has had her battles too, sepsis. She overcome sepsis as well.
Yeah, she got sepsis 2 weeks ago, which was quite a shock to the system. It knocked her quite bad, but eventually we got it under control and she had to go for a second surgery, which wasn't initially in the plan, but had to be done because of the, I suppose, the effects of the sepsis that it had on her body. So,
And what are you being told now by the medical professionals? Is your time there somewhat open-ended, Rhianna, or have they given you a time frame that they hope that maybe you could at least move closer to home?
No, there'd be no moving closer to home until we are home. And I suppose we don't want to move her anywhere that isn't as specialised as Crumlin is. Like, they're incredible, but no, there's no timeline. There's months is all we've been told, because they don't want to give you a false hope either. Anything can take a turn. Like, the sepsis already set us back minimum 2 weeks, so you don't know, you can't predict it, I suppose. So
yeah, and thanks to having the accommodation that you do at Ronald McDonald House, it means Cahill and your toddler can call down, I presume, mostly at the weekends where it's possible, but it means that you're not completely isolated. Because I would say the weekdays are long in and out of the hospital and trying to pass the time for you, Rhianna, it's tough.
Yeah. No, the services here are just incredible and we're really, really grateful. And you can have, like, my parents can come and stay and stuff too. So it's amazing what they offer for you.
That's fantastic. Now, your other half is fundraising, isn't he, for the Children's Health Foundation. They have a fundraiser runs at this time of year every year. Tell us what he's doing.
Yeah, so the Children's Health Foundation set up the fundraiser of running 100 kilometres in March. So Cahill decided he would undertake it in honour of Billy. And we have raised €9,000 for the Children's Health Foundation, which has just been incredible. Today's the last day, so we would hope to get a bit more in today. But it's been amazing to see the generosity of the people as well.
Yeah, and often we talk to parents on this programme, and sometimes you don't realise organisations like Ronald McDonald House or the Children's Health Foundation are there until you need them. And
yeah,
then they become
absolutely.
Some of the most
absolutely.
Important organisations in the world.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, okay, so how can people support Cahill and you? It'd be great, seeing this is the last day, to push through the €10,000 mark. Where's the best place people can check out the fundraiser?
So we both have our own links on our social medias. My TikTok is RhiannaBolton23. People can get the link on there, and our Instagrams as well. That's the only kind of places we have the links.
No problem. And we'll share them on our socials as well, link them off, which makes it easier for people donate. And it would be lovely, as you say, or as I said, sorry, to break through at least the 10,000 barrier on this, the last day. Why not head for 15 or even more? Right. Listen, the best wishes to you and wee Billy and Cahill and your son. And thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. We wish you nothing but the best going forward.
Thanks very much, Greg. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Look after yourself. As I say, we will link those social medias of Rhianna and Cahill on our social media, just in case you want to support them. And we wish Rhianna, Cahill, Billy, all the very best in the months and years ahead. And it's astonishing, too, really, the ability of medicine in this country. You know, it gets a lot of negativity and some of it's justified, right? But it has to be said that it does amazing things at times as well. Right, lots of you continuing to text in on the issue of food safety. I ate a Thornton's chocolate from 2016 recently and there was nothing wrong with it. It tasted lovely. The chocolate wasn't even that white colour that chocolate sometimes goes. Yeah, I know what you're on about. Yeah, I only ate one as I was afraid of getting sick. I wasn't. I should have ate a lot of them because nobody else would. Right, OK. That's 2016. What year is it now? Oh, that's actually even more terrible than I anticipated. That's 10 years old, Thornton's chocolate. Can I just say clearly, I am not endorsing anyone to eat out of date food, but we've had some remarkable stories so far of people doing just that. Five-year-old Marmite. I mean, that spits opinion at the best of times. From time to time over the years, we have covered local concerns over road safety in St. Johnston. We know last month, very sadly, two young men lost their lives on a stretch of road in St. Johnston, a third very seriously injured. And then yesterday we spoke to local man Raymond, who has a vehicle recovery service in the area, a garage in the area. And he was talking of a recent incident whereby another vehicle seemingly clipped a curb on a dangerous corner there across the road and ended up in a garden. And we can only thank God, I suppose, that it wasn't more serious than it could have been if an HGV or any other vehicle, for an example, had been coming in the other direction. Kelly is with me now, Kelly, because you are very keen, aren't you, to see signage, new signage, and indeed speed ramps on this stretch of road with a view, obviously, to try and help prevent any future crashes or any further tragedy.
Yes, good morning, Greg. Mm. I listened to the show yesterday and I'd heard Raymond and then back last month the same, and I just feel, you know, time has passed and nothing seems to be done. I know there's a petition set up. The locals, I think, find it's madness that, you know, the road is in the condition that it's in, that so many vehicles have went off the road on the corner, and from the corner right over, you know, past Harkins Film Station, past McDade's Carebreakers, to the next corner past the bridge just before Railway Park. That stretch of road is treacherous. There's a small crossroad between the Carebreakers and the Film Station, and it's just it's a nightmare to get out of, you know, emerging onto the main road from it. The football pitch, the cricket pitch are down here, and, you know, you're just, it's a wing and a prayer if you get out from traffic coming from the Carrigan side. You know, they can be coming times at a speed, and they don't realise there's an emerging road, and it's concealed coming from the Carrigan's direction. So you have that hazard, and then obviously the corner where the tragedy occurred is a hazard. So the whole stretch of road where the signage and the ramps would be very welcome, I don't think it would go far enough. Even to cross the road on foot can be extremely dangerous at times, you know.
You've lived there for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Has it stayed the same, got worse or improved in terms of safety?
No, I would say it has got worse because obviously the road has got busier. There's more traffic on the road. Mm. You know, on match days and training days, there's a lot of traffic up and down from the railway road. And, you know, the danger has increased 100%.
Yeah, and there is a sense locally, I know, because I've spoken to so many locals over the last wee while, there is a sense that yous have been crying out for something and those calls have fallen on deaf ears.
Yeah, definitely. I have, you know, children, and when they were learning to drive, when they would have left the house, you had a fear, were they going to make it out at the top of the road without something, you know, going into them? Thankfully, nothing has ever you know, happened. But I have witnessed and have had a lot of near misses myself trying to, you know, manoeuvre out onto the main road.
And of course, primarily in relation to the tragedy in February, our thoughts are first and foremost with those who lost their lives and the responding emergency services and their loved ones, sorry, I should say as well.
Yeah.
But even someone like you in the local vicinity, that's a night that will stay with you for a long time, I'm sure. One you were dreading that would
100%.
Happen and then it did. What do you remember of that night?
It definitely will stay with me. Obviously, there was the lights, the sirens, and of course, you open your door and you look out to see what's happening, and you know there's a mother in despair trying to find out her son's condition, which sadly we learned afterwards, you know, two young fellas had passed away.
Unimaginable, isn't it?
It's heartbreaking to think, and as a parent, the darkness that they have suffered since, I couldn't imagine.
And also too, I understand where we can hear explanations like, well, you can't do it because of that, or we can't, you know, it's not the responsibility of this organisation, it's the responsibility of that organisation. This is kind of one of those issues, really, I think, that supersedes the bureaucracy, and it's a case of really finding out, well, who needs to get involved and what can realistically be done?
Yeah, definitely. I understand. I mean, there's protocols and procedures with everything, but you know, this is people's lives, and I have no idea whose decision it is at the end of the day, or, you know, how it works, or how they get the ball rolling, or how they decide what to put where.
Mm.
But I would like for them to take a minute and think, if a tragedy like this came to their doorstep, you know, how would they feel?
Yeah. I understand, yeah. Okay, listen, thank you very much for explaining the situation as clearly as you have, Kelly. And I suppose part of the reason we're speaking, you're encouraging people who maybe haven't signed the petition to do so. I don't know. There is a petition 100%. Up and running, isn't there? There is.
There is. Okay. There is. But, you know, you would like to think it would change things, or it would usher things on. But, you know, I've heard Raymond twice on the radio, and I just felt like I needed to, you know, say something as well, because it's a daily battle.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, manoeuvring out of the railway road, out of the farm station, It really is. And if you're not local to the area, sorry, you don't know the corner, you don't know there's a junction there, you're unaware, you know, that somebody's going to pull out in front of you, or you're coming around a very sharp corner and there's a good possibility that you will lose control in that corner if you're going at any speed.
And then we heard too from Raymond about the homeowner, the garden in which that car ended up in, you know, afraid to let children out to play because they don't know if a car is going to come in on top. I mean, that's crazy to live your life like that, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I absolutely understand that, because I can imagine if I was there and had young children, they absolutely would not be out in the garden.
Right, okay.
Because a car could come around the corner at any time, you know, that's it.
All right, Kelly. Listen, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, Greg, thank you.
Thank you. Look after yourself. It's been nice, actually, over the last couple of days, people calling up to collect their 1,000 euros. Last week, as part of the 20,000 euro home makeover and cash draw, the station gave away 1,000 euro a day across all the various programmes, or some of the various programmes during daytime. And people have been calling up collecting their cheques, which is lovely. And the big one is still yet to come. It can be easy to forget once the daily cash prizes are given up, but no, Thursday. There is a ticket in that Trombola, or yet to be in that Trombola, that is going to win 10,000 euro of a home makeover from Foy's and 10,000 euro in cash. And you can still buy your tickets. Don't forget, if you want to buy one ticket, it's 15 euro. If you want to buy five, you can get them for 10 euro each. So either yourself and for other people as gifts, or even group in with people and make that saving. It's completely up to you. But you can still buy your tickets because, as I say, the draw is not until Thursday on John Breslin's Around the Northwest radio programme. So go on to our website, highlandradio.com. It's really simple to buy your tickets there. You just click the makeover draw link, answer a simple question, and purchase your tickets. It's perfectly safe and secure. But alternatively, if you think, right, maybe it's going to be a late winner, who's to say? Could be the ticket may well not be sold. That is the reality. We don't know. It's a draw. If no one bought any further tickets, of course, the ticket would have been sold, but you get where I'm coming from. So if you want to get your tickets, you can give us a call here at the radio station as well on 07491 25000. It's still a cracking prize, you know, 20 grand. So the biggest prize of all is still there to be won. 10,000 euro for home makeover to spend at Foy's. Now, that could be to renovate one room, and I'll tell you, it would do some job of any room in a house. Or I think you could spread it out over a number of rooms and really freshen up the house, maybe with things tightening up a little bit, you know, the best option for many. Because, you know, moving home is not really practical. You have to be downsizing significantly, I think. But anyway, maybe you want to do up the house and make it feel fresh for the summer. And then have 10,000 euro in your back pocket to head to Lanzarote five times or whatever you want to do. So if you want to get your tickets, you can still do so. Call us on 07491 25000. We'll very quickly process them for you. And also, you can go onto the website, highlandradio.com, and buy them there. It's completely up to you if you want to get involved, but we make it as simple for you as is possible. Hi, Greg. Can you please say a big thank you to a guy who I only know his first name as Noel. He kindly helped me at the recycling centre in Pennyburn yesterday. Very nice of him. That comes in from Tracy. Good people in the world. There is Tracy. And we love hearing about these stories. We had a lovely lady on earlier in the week who had a blowout in her car. And as she was waiting for her son to come and assist her, two guys just landed. And they said, look, we can get you on the road. Then she says, we'll have a hospital appointment. And they said, well, we can bring you to the hospital. You know, there are lots of good people out there, and share those stories, because, you know, the world can feel like a very dark place from time to time. I want to return to St. Johnston and Richard. Hi, Richard. Thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Greg.
You were listening to Kelly there and backing what she had to say 100%.
Yeah, I wasn't good. But the problem is, Greg, what's wrong? The council can't wait that corner. You know, there are far too many people been hurt up there.
You'd be familiar
that's
with
the point I'm putting across here.
Yeah, I mean, you're like Kelly. You're very familiar every time there is a crash.
That's correct. Yes.
And how often do you see it?
And I've been in an apple green shop there one day, and when I was on giving me lunch, I heard the wild bang too, and it was a lorry in a car before this accident happened. The corner needs to be widened. It has to be put that the council to be widened that corner. And they're building new houses up there. Why can they not take that corner away and make it safe for people in life?
And you think, do you, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, that we shouldn't wait, that there has to be some short-term solutions to avoid a future tragedy?
Absolutely, Greg. Yeah. It has, because it's not going to end.
Okay, right.
It has to be, like, something has to be done. I'm only putting my point across for Kelly there. I understand where she's coming from. She comes out of beside Applegreen there, and it's a dangerous place, like, you know.
Yeah, okay. And unfortunately, we're getting all too regular reminders of how dangerous it is. That's the problem.
Yeah, Greg, it's not going to end unless the council does something about it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Richard. I appreciate your time and staying on that issue. Lots of you messaging in, getting involved in that conversation. Greg, just a quick question on the St. Johnstone Road safety issue. If the council can't do something about that part of the road, why can't a speed van be issued to be there if that road is unsafe and dangerous? If nothing else, it could be a deterrent to slow down the traffic in that village. Are these speed vans not about road safety? They are, of course, and the... There is, in time, new locations allocated. There was a whole load of new locations announced there recently. None in St. Johnstone, as far as I'm aware. A caller asks, when does a regional road take priority over a national road? It should never take priority, but in Glenties it does. Heading to Dunlow at the bottom of the town, you meet left to go to Dunlow on the N56. You turn right, an R road to go to Letterkenny, but... On the opposite journey from Dunlow, you have to stop and give way to traffic coming from Letterkenny. Lesser Road has priority. That caller asked a specific issue to their local region there. On the issue of Mass, someone asked just before 10 o'clock about the length of Mass. What's the sweet spot? Half an hour, 50 minutes? Should it be a fixed amount of time? A caller says, the church has often talking to the converted in the Mass, so giving a 10-minute sermon just puts people off. Short and sharp to make you think, not long and boring where you've lost interest. The sermons at Mass are a big problem. Some priests can speak for 15 minutes or more and they believe there's no real meaning at all behind it. I suppose, you know, you can have some people are more engaging than others, whether they're doctors, solicitors, priests, or whatever they might be. So I never really thought too much about this, but some people are finding the sermons too long and not terribly engaging. Another caller says, if you knew what the Mass was, if you knew Jesus and that he is present in a very special way in the Holy Eucharist, you would not want to rush in and rush out in 10 minutes. In the Easter story of the Passion, we hear Jesus say, watch 1 hour with me. Okay, there may come a time when one cannot stay for the full Mass, example, until the final blessing. Well, that's okay. God will understand. But if you engaged with our Lord during the Mass, you wouldn't even notice 50 minutes passing. Anyway, daily Mass can be much shorter, they say. On petrol costs, petrol has gone up 5 cents and diesel by 2 cents in a petrol station in Inishowen since Saturday. And I'm afraid to say that's the only direction these fuel prices are going. Greg, you're too young to understand how badly behaved the Gardaí were in the past. They paid for nothing and got away with it. Listen, like any institution, any organisation, historically, of course, I am familiar with much of what you're talking about. And, you know, the way policing was done in the past, there was good elements of it and there was bad elements of it. There's no doubt about that now. But I'm talking about the force as it is now. I'm kind of at the age where, you know, people my age or even younger than me have young girls and guys going into the Gardaí, and you kind of wonder, is that a really fantastic career move given the situation there is now with social media and what have you? I don't think the sins of the past should really necessarily be an excuse for the abuse of the current crop of Gardaí. That's all I'm saying, but it doesn't directly affect me because I have no relation in An Garda Síochána. More of you texting in on fuel. Hi, Greg. The reason Sinn Féin objected to the fuel cut by the government was because they felt the proposed cuts weren't good enough. Don't let the government fool us with the crumbs. I think most people understand how that works. So, you know, Sinn Féin put in a counter motion. That motion is defeated. The government's motion is passed and either party or either grouping can sort of frame it whichever way they like. Forecourt operators should have gotten a rebate of excise on stocks held at 12 to give small and large retailers level playing fields when the cuts were brought in, and also consumers the earliest reduction at pumps possible. Yeah, indeed, that would have been a logical way to do it. And I think it would have been good on the industry as well, because they got an awful lot of slack for not dropping prices when the fuel in their tanks was at the higher rate of excise. Greg, how much is the government taking in on petrol and diesel in the last month? I had the figure. I think it was 54 million in 1 month additional with increased taxes, if I'm not mistaken. Right. Greg, what proportion of listeners want a petrol station beside the site of the Chrysler disaster? It's not necessary to voice the wishes of these people. Donegal County Council have made the wrong decision again, but Greg is always defending the council. Not really, because I'm only giving people a platform to speak. I'm not defending the council in any way, which shape or form. But I know in speaking to Donna, she would understand that there's questions that I have to ask in the interests of fairness and representing as many views as is possible, and done so in a respectful, which I hope I did, in a very respectful way. Please give a special mention to Davy O'Donnell from Tullygay, Letterkenny, on his 80th birthday from all his neighbours. Happy birthday, Davy. I hope you have a fantastic day and all your neighbours wishing you all the very best. And here's another thank you, by the way. Love it. Keep them coming. Thank you to the car park attendants in Letterkenny Hospital. They were so good to me while my husband was in hospital. They were out on their own. They helped me to park and reverse the car as I needed. They even moved a cone for me, and they don't get enough thanks. Hey, keep your messages of positivity coming in. If you wish to pass on any good wishes or thanks to anyone, more than happy to do that on the programme.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
Now, Tuesday, the 31st of March, just approaching 20 minutes past 10, and it's time for this week's edition of Community Garda Information, and I'm joined in studio by Garda Grainne Doherty from Letterkenny Garda Station. Grainne, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Really appreciate you calling up, and we'll start with appeals and Garda investigating criminal damage in Donnyloop.
Yes, this incident of criminal damage happened in the area of Donnyloop, Castlefin, on Sunday, the 22nd of March, between approximately 8 p.m. and 8:05 p.m., The conservatory window of a house in that area was smashed with a rock at that time, and a vehicle was heard leaving the area. It's believed to have travelled in the direction of Claddy. So we're appealing to anybody who might have travelled along that road through Donnyloop from the Alt direction towards Claddy between 7:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. on that date with a dash cam to please make that footage available to us. If anybody observed any type of suspicious activity or vehicles in that area on that date, we're asking them to please contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530.
Now, we're going to Remelton and criminal damage reported.
Yes, another incident of criminal damage. This happened in the area of Mina Toll, Remelton, between 3:30 p.m. and 5:20 p.m. on Tuesday, the 24th of March. So the fence around a house in that area was damaged between those times by a vehicle. We're firstly appealing for the driver in question to contact Gardaí in Milford on 91 530 60. We're also appealing for dash cam footage, as always, from that area between those times. And if anybody can assist with any type of relevant information or with dash cam footage, please contact us.
And this comes up really quite frequently where there is an incident and things like a fence is damaged. And I know you've clarified the liability in this regard, but, you know, driving off, if you're able to drive off, it is a crime.
It is, yeah, really, really and truly. Look, we're asking them, that's why I firstly appeal to them to come forward and speak to us. You know, it's better that they come in person before the Gardaí arrive at their door.
Yeah. All right, criminal damage at Railway Avenue in Killygordon.
Yes, this happened on Thursday the 26th of March in Railway Avenue, Killygordon, between approximately quite a short time period here, 10:30 p.m. and 10:50 p.m. So two tyres of a parked vehicle were slashed in that area between those times. We're appealing to anybody in that area who might have observed any type of suspicious activity to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530. And the Garda confidential line, of course, this goes for all of our appeals today. They can be contacted on 1800 666 111.
Somewhat strange circumstances surrounding the traffic collision appeal in Remelton.
Yes, this is a rather unusual one. So this happened on Thursday, the 26th of March, in around 10 p.m. So a driver was travelling along the R245 at Black's Glen, Remelton. They were travelling from Remelton towards Milford, and the driver, she observed the headlights of a parked car on her own side of the road up ahead. So she slowly drove around this parked car, and as she did so, the passenger door of the parked car swung open and collided with her car. So damage was caused to her car, to the paintwork, and a light was smashed also. A number of youths were in this parked car. Words were exchanged between the driver and them, and they then left in the direction of Remelton. So their car was dark blue in colour. Their passenger side window was smashed. So we're appealing to anybody, motorists, who might have travelled along that route between 9:30 and 10:30 that night with a dash cam, to contact Milford Gardaí on 91 530 60. Any relevant information should be passed on to Gardaí in Milford also.
Strange one. Right, theft in Letterkenny next.
Yes, this incident happened on the Neil T. Blaney Road, Letterkenny, in the early hours of Saturday the 28th of March. So in and around 3:40 a.m. So a delivery driver was pulled up at a business on that road, and he was unloading the lorry, and he then noticed that the driver's door of the cab had been lying open and his wallet had been stolen from within the cab while he was busy unloading the goods from the rear of the lorry. The wallet was found later on, and a sum of cash and foreign currencies, US dollars and South African rand, had been stolen from it. So we're appealing to anybody who might have travelled along that route, the Neil T. Blaney Road, between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. on that date, with a dash cam, to make that footage available to us. Any relevant information should be forwarded to Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167100.
There have been a number of reports of distraction thefts across the country, and some also in our own county.
Well, yes. Well, we have had reports of distraction thefts in the past within Donegal. Mm. Thankfully, we haven't had any recent reports, but there is an increase in them nationwide across the country.
So if you're seeing a trend, now's the time to talk about it.
Exactly. Now's the time to pass that information on, make people aware that these thefts are happening and how to prevent them. So distraction theft is a type of theft where the victim's attention is diverted in order to steal their belongings, really, usually valuables like a wallet, purse, bank cards, phone, jewellery. And it's a very common tactic used by scam artists, pickpockets and opportunistic thieves. And it's often in public places. So it can also be used as a tactic also, we've discussed this in the past, in order to gain access into your home where a distraction theft happens on your doorstep. Somebody may call and ask to use your toilet, or their car's broken down while their accomplice then sneaks in around the back of the house while you're chatting on the doorstep, and they break into the back of the house. Can happen at homes also, that's something to be aware of. But the recent trend is happening mostly in shopping centre car parks outside shopping complexes. Often these criminals will operate in pairs or groups. So one person distracts the victim and the other then takes the opportunity to steal your belongings. So I've just picked out a couple of examples that have happened in very recent times across the country. In one instance, a lady, she was sitting in her parked car outside a shop. A man then approached her to tell her that her car had been rear-ended and damage had been caused to it. He advised her to get out of the car, check this damage. The car would need to be checked underneath. So she got out of the car, of course, you know, and checked the back of the car with the man to see where the supposed damage was. The car hadn't been damaged at all. She returned back to her car and realised that her bank card had been stolen from the front seat of the car while she had been distracted at the rear of the car. So then that stolen card was used a while later, and the PIN number was inputted in order to take funds out of her account. And she had been in the shop earlier on that day, and she had inputted her PIN number into the card machine in the shop. I suppose a lot of people aren't doing that now. They're tapping the card, you know. They're so she had put in her PIN number into the shop. So this is possible. You know, somebody may have observed her putting her PIN number into the card machine in the shop.
Yeah, and you can see how someone is bombarded with information there. So your first feeling is, oh my God, my car. You know,
of course.
So by the time you've got your head together, it's all done.
Yeah, and more often than not, in a lot of the instances that I've read of, there's a number, they're in a group. There could be two of them, three of them in the shop. They're watching you in the shop. They're following you around the shop. Then maybe one of them gets too close to you while you're putting in your PIN number at the till. You know, they take note of your PIN number, and then they follow you outside, and this distraction theft then happens at the car, and they take your bank card. They're already in possession of your PIN number at that stage.
Any other examples?
So another incident, a lady left a shop to return to her car, and a man just approached her at her car, and he struck up a conversation about a lost puppy. And she had already placed her belongings into the passenger side of the car at this stage. So he kept her chatting then at the driver's door of the car with this lost puppy. So while she was kept busy chatting, a second man entered the car via the passenger side and took her bank cards. So we're just, look, we want to make the public aware of this, that it is happening. Take simple precautions in order to avoid falling victim to it. Always remain aware of your surroundings, especially in crowded areas such as a shop. You know, if you are at a till in a shop, you're putting in your card number. If somebody's getting up too close to you, just be aware of that, you know. Keep your belongings close to you. Keep them zipped into a pocket or a bag. Be cautious when approached by strangers with odd or overly engaging behaviour, especially when you're at your car loading or unloading your shopping. Be aware of your surroundings. That's what we discussed this already. When using ATMs or the payment machine in the shop, you know, cover your PIN number when you're inputting your PIN number.
I often find, and I kind of would observe people doing, it may be trying to see the numbers. Do you know what I mean? And the last thing they need to do when trying to see the numbers is cover them, or maybe the numbers have faded somewhat on ATMs. You know, like sometimes that's why people aren't maybe as discreet, because they literally have to, you know, see what's happening. And the screens on these ATMs can
it's
be so dim as well.
Too,
you know,
sometimes.
So
but just if
that's not an excuse, but you can see why people maybe let you know, throw caution to the wind because it's too blooming complicated.
Yeah, well, if someone is too close to you at an ATM or while you're paying for goods at a shop, you know, make sure that just that you have your hand over the numbers while you're typing them in. And of course, look, report any suspicious or criminal incidents immediately to Gardaí. Even, you know, if you're working in a shop and you observe somebody maybe getting too close to somebody at the counter and you see that they're keeping an eye on them and they're watching them, put their PIN number in, just contact the Garda station and give a description of them, make us aware
of it. Okay, right. Now, there are traffic restrictions in the Twin Towns this weekend.
Yes, this is on Easter Sunday. So the annual Easter commemoration event will take place in the Twin Towns on Easter Sunday. That's April 5th. Traffic disruption may be expected in both Ballybofey and Stranorlar that day between in and around 1:30pm to 6pm, and diversions will be in place. There will be local access only to Ballybofey, Stranorlar main streets between those times. Traffic from Donegal Town travelling northwards will be diverted at Lidl on the Donegal Road in Ballybofey. They'll be sent over Dreenan and on towards the N15 at Stranorlar. Traffic from Letterkenny Lifford direction will be diverted at the top of Stranorlar just beyond McClay's Corner there at Millbrae. They'll be sent over Dreenan and back out again at Lidl on the Donegal Road. There will be guards there. There'll be plenty of guards there at these points, and if you know, they'll show you the way and signs out as well.
Right, okay.
So we're just asking anybody, if you're intending to travel through the Twin Towns on Easter Sunday, just leave a wee bit of extra time for your journey. Just be aware that this event is taking place and that there are minor disruptions, traffic disruptions.
Okay, and of course this is a public holiday weekend, and with that comes the usual increase in Garda operations on the roads.
Yeah, and we're like a broken record at this stage. Every bank holiday weekend, but it must be said, look, unfortunately,
you'll land back in next Tuesday with, you know, statistics on the amount of people drunk
exactly,
driving. We have to keep going, you know.
Yeah, and statistics do show bank holiday weekends, there's a bigger, greater influx of traffic on the roads. So we're just asking people to be careful. Gardaí will be out in the roads this weekend. They'll be conducting high visibility patrols and checkpoints right across Donegal. And we're appealing to everybody, please just drive safely. Don't drive under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Slow down, wear your seatbelt. And we're all very, very well aware of the results of drink and drug driving and speed. It can be devastating. Leave your mobile phone well out of reach when you're driving. Don't be tempted to reach for your mobile for any reason while you're behind the wheel. Never take any type of unnecessary risks on the roads. And look, our 24-hour Garda stations are all open over the, as always, they're open all Easter. So if anybody needs us for any reason, you can contact us 24/7 in Letterkenny on 91671100, in Buncrana 93320540, Milford 91530600, or Ballyshannon 071 985 8530, and as always 999 or 112 in the event of an emergency. And just on that note as well, just the Facebook page, again, I've said this before, but if you do wish to report any matters, especially, I can't reiterate this enough, if it's of an urgent nature, please do not message the Garda Facebook or Donegal Garda Facebook page if it's of an urgent nature in particular, because that page is not monitored 24/7, and we would hate to miss, you know, a call if somebody urgently needed our help. Contact Gardaí directly on any of those numbers. And just, we're wishing everybody a lovely weekend, and please stay safe whether you're on the road or off the road.
Yeah.
Don't eat too much chocolate.
No, I'm not a big fan of chocolate anyway. What about you?
Oh, I like chocolate.
Do you?
Of course I do, yeah.
Do we have that egg? No, we don't. We forgot about that. Just on a final positive note, Greg, if you can give a big thanks to the Gardaí for assisting us on Sunday in St Johnston with Davin's Drive. They were a huge asset to us from Noel and Gary at the Tractor Run. Thank you.
Oh, that's lovely, yeah. It's our pleasure. Any type of charity event like that and such a good cause. I believe there was a great turnout too on Sunday,
For sure. All right, very listen, good. Thank you so much, Gran. You have a great weekend.
You too.
No, it's not the weekend. It's only Tuesday.
Well, have a good weekend anyway.
Okay, yeah. Thanks so very much indeed. That was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 31st of March. It's back for you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday again. Now, there's been mixed reaction to news of quota discussions in Europe. Senator Manus Boyle, I presume you are welcoming any increases that we get out of Europe. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. And first of all, thanks to you and your team for constantly highlighting this issue. And that's really what we need. Yeah, listen, it's a small one, Greg. It really is. But I think it gives people a wee bit of heart to see that, you know, we're working hard on the behalf of the Irish fishermen and trying to turn things around. We had 20 years of massive cuts, and I'm not saying things is going to be turned around overnight, but, you know, it gives you a wee bit of heart. Like, a lot of people put a lot of effort into this since December Council, and you know, especially the POs of all the fishing companies, we'd really given it everything to try and turn this around. And that just gives you a wee bit of a lift to say, you know, that things can be done when there's a willingness to do it, you know.
Yeah, and I don't want to be negative, Manus, but is it not really a sign of the times of how bad things are when we are celebrating an additional 32 million euro worth of a mackerel quota? You know, we've got the tarnished Simon Harris hailing it as a big deal. When, if the truth be told, is it not really just a drop in the ocean, pardon the pun?
I would have said, like, to be honest, we got a what we got was Armageddon this year, as you well know, Greg. Like, I mean, we got slashed on everything, you know. But at the same time, we're fighting back, which we've never done before. And I'll be honest, like, I was only out in Europe twice. And to see the way these other companies operate out there, we're not worth the races at all. And we need to get worth the races, you know. So to me, like, it's 32 million that will be coming into the Irish economy. I know, and like, for what we lost, it's pittance. But at the same time, like, there's a massive effort went done by a lot of people to try and get us over the line. And it, I think it just gives the fishing community a wee lift. Really, that's all, you know. But it's still 32 million into the Irish economy as a good start, you know.
Right, stay there. John Menaries, Vice Chair of the National Inshore Fishermen's Association. John, you're not as inclined to cartwheel at this news as others might.
Definitely not. Unfortunately, Greg, for the inshore sector, this 32 million won't reach us. It'll benefit 50 vessels out of a fleet of 2,000 in the Irish fleet. So it is anything that benefits Ireland is good, but the vast, vast majority of the fishing sector, over 95%, won't see any benefit from this. And we're just very, very concerned that there seems to be a lot of praise in Avon, which for the minister, it's good for Ireland, but for the minister that's responsible for the whole of the Irish fishing fleet, it's just unfortunate that probably 99% of us won't gain anything from this. But I just like to see, I think Mann has put it very well. As he said, it's what can be done if there's a willingness to do it. And I don't think we see there's a willingness to do anything for the inshore sector, unfortunately. So we're going to have to continue our fight.
I can't imagine it will take 50 vessels too long to clear up this extra quota. I mean, how many days at sea? How many days at sea does that account for? A couple?
Oh, probably less than a day's fishing will catch it for the fleet. The processing capacity in Killybegs, what's landing Killybegs will be processed within a day or two. Other fish will be landed in Faroes, Norway, Scotland. So the actual benefit to Ireland will probably be a lot less than the 32 million, unfortunately.
Manus, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just the best way to sort of paint a picture for your listeners is imagine if the fuel subsidies that were announced by the government last week about 20 cent on petrol and diesel, and then to come if in the small print it was only for people with Rolls Royces and Bentleys. This is kind of what this is for the Irish fishing industry. It's wonderful, and the headline is very grabbing, but when you read down into the details of it, it benefits very few, unfortunately.
You'd accept that too, Manus. I mean, you do have a passion for and a great understanding of the fishing industry. I suppose it hurts when this is spun maybe as a big boost to the entire industry, but it doesn't really filter down.
No. Well, I think John knows me well enough. You know, John's like myself. He's passionate about the industry, and anything that I can help John with, I do. And I mean, I've been calling for the fuel subsidy since last week in the Shannon. I have been inundated from the inshore fishermen and ordinary men that's not in any grouping about the fuel subsidy. And I totally agree with them, and we're working hard to try and to do something on that. I mean, Spain has taken on a fuel subsidy. Why should Ireland not take on a fuel subsidy? Mm-hmm. And like John said, yes, this will probably benefit the larger vessels and, you know, hopefully that, you know, we can talk to the minister, we might get some benefit for the like of John too. But I think going down the road, the task force is the way that we can get John and Anshore and all these other fishing organisations integrated, that they get a fair share I mean, that's just what it's going to be set up for. And hopefully the like of John and all the rest of them will be looked after in this task force. Now, we as so-called politicians, we have no input into it. But, like, we can still help the boys through the Fisheries Committee. We have a great Fisheries Committee
just
there.
Just in relation to stuff you do have an
input on it, you know.
Yeah, Manus, just in relation to what you do have an input in, you talked about Spain introducing measures to support their inshore fishermen. And you sort of said, I think, well, why can't we? I mean, you are a Fine Gael senator, and I see a picture of you standing shoulder to shoulder with Simon Harris. Did you ask him why we can't, and what was his answer? With all the respect I have for you, of course, you can't decouple yourself from the decision makers. You're standing on a boat shoulder to shoulder with Simon Harris. What did he tell you as to why they're not introducing measures to support these smaller fishermen?
Well, last night when I talked to him at 11 o'clock, he said that he was looking into it, because I've been on to numerous Martin Hayden, the minister, Mr. Dooley, and Simon Harris about trying to get something for the inshore fishermen. So I have to wait till he comes back to me on that, Greg. And as soon as he does, I'll come back to you on it. Mm. But, I mean, we are fighting the case for it. I mean, I see in my own business, or my father's business here, we're being hit by fuel too. And I mean, it was something we hadn't budgeted for either, you know. So has the agri contractors. There's so many people, and the householders being hit by this. That something really needs to be done. So all I can do as a voice is just keep pushing the best I can and trying to get them to listen to me on behalf of the Marine.
John, as Vice Chair of the National Inshore Fishermen's Association, must feel like you're, you know, fighting a losing battle, you know, when there are announcements and it doesn't necessarily include your members, and, you know, fighting just to get some assistance that other countries are putting into place, you know, almost immediately. Like, what future do you think the industry has, certainly in your sector?
Well, for our sector at the minute, Greg, excuse me, it's very bleak. Like Manus says, the Tánaiste is looking into it. We've been raising issues of supports needed for the inshore sector since COVID. We got no supports for COVID. We got no aid for Brexit. We got no aid for the Ukraine war. Now we have another fuel crisis where, in my own instance, diesel within the space of a week went from less than 90 cent a litre almost €1.50, and then you hear with the announcements from the government, they took support of 3 cent. Like 3 cent when your price went up over 60 cent is worthless. Mm. As primary producers, no more than the farmers who are price takers. We all the cost that our suppliers face, we will take a hit to soften that. And then on the other side, for buyers, for the consumer, how can consumers pay for top quality products, the top shelf product, world class product that goes around the world, all over the world, from Hong Kong to Spain to Portugal, everywhere. They're not going to have the buying power now. So we see the situation now after Easter, when the fleet does finally get to sea, when the weather does settle, prices are going to crash. We already have members whose boats are tied up over the fuel. It's just not economically viable to put to sea. Mm. From Malinhead right round the coast, boats are tied up. So it is very bleak, but as Manus says, if there's a willingness to do something, it can be done. We see our other European neighbours, Spain, Portugal, France, are all supporting their industry. Mm. We have Minister Dooley, he's supporting the pelagic sector. He needs it's time to step up.
Yeah, and I think we are, Manus, we are in a better position, I suppose, when you do have the Tánaiste taking an interest specifically in these types of matters. It has to be better than fighting for the government even just to recognise this industry exists?
Yeah, well, listen, Greg, if we go back to 3 years ago when I called for a public meeting in Killybegs, 300 people, and I first went to Dublin with a good friend of mine, Stephen Lovett, to talk to the TDs and ministers at the time. I wasn't even a councillor running. Nobody knew anything about fishing. It's about educating the people up there, and I think that's what we're doing. We've got it into the programme for government, which was a hard job. And I think since that, then, with the committee, like we have 4 Donegal representatives on the Fisheries Committee, and I think even John would say that, like John and them's in most, maybe once or twice a month, and we're highlighting. That's the only way we're going to get things changed, with people like John coming in and sitting down in front of the committee and telling exactly how it is.
All right, listen.
We just have to keep working together and keep the pressure on.
Both of you, thank you very much indeed. Senator Manus Boyle, John Minnari, Vice Chair of the National Inshore Fishermen's Association. And this is what the Taoiseach Simon Harris had to say about this estimated €32 million boost in mackerel landings to Ireland's coastal and fishing communities.
I know it has been an extraordinarily tough time for fishing communities. I was in Killybegs not that long ago with my colleague and friend Senator Manus Boyle and met the fishing industry. We have a lot of work to do as a government to support this vital sector. We have a lot of work to do at a European level, but I do think the agreement, the breakthrough at a European level, is a positive development. It is worth tens of millions of euro back to fishing communities. It is a step forward, a small step forward, but a significant step forward. There's an onus on us now as a government to work hand in glove with the fishing industry. These are real jobs, real communities, a real local economy. It needs to be and it will be supported by government. And I do hope this €32 million agreement is really a confidence building measure and a very important step in the right direction. And please be assured of my ongoing support for the fishing industry. And I look forward to sitting down with them again in Donegal shortly to see how we take those next steps together.
A caller says, hi, we're based in England and we can no longer watch the live stream. It's saying it's offline. Why is this? Ah, I know you're watching it through the website, aren't you? I'm going to fix that as soon as I come off air. My bad, I meant to do that on Friday. You can watch it on YouTube or Facebook. There's just a link I need to update for the online on the website. My apologies, I will get that sorted. Hi, Greg, why don't ATMs mix up the number order after every transaction? Surely in today's technology, it would be easy to do. It would make it harder for someone to work out your PIN number. Right, so why don't ATMs mix up the number order? My word, it's complicated enough. So in other words, one could be where nine is and five where three is, and you'd have to follow them around. I don't know. Might work. Let's get back to the situation in St Johnston. It would be quite simple to sort out the road problems in St Johnston. Make a one-way system through the town. That comes in from Jim in Strabane. Another, I live in St Johnston, and although it is a tight corner, it's people speeding through the village. That's the problem. If they were doing the speed limit, there'd be no problems with the corner. But there's a number of factors that contribute to road traffic collisions. There's the condition of the vehicle. There is the driver, there is the road. Now, as far as I can determine from what people are saying, if you don't know the area, it's possible that you could get caught out. And that's where the responsibility of having the road as safe as is possible needs to be. Now, if it's a case of the driver, let's slow them down with speed bumps. Signage will only have so big of an effect. Or you change the layout of the road altogether. But something needs to be done, because if we just say, oh, it's drivers and you don't do anything to change driver behaviour, well, then it'll never be fixed. So the result is you still have to fix the road, whether it's drivers or the road. Do you get where I'm coming from? One country around the world, I can't remember which it is, had a no-drive day. Caller asked, how would that work in Donegal? It wouldn't work very well at all. None of us would get anywhere, I think. Now, moving on. On the programme, we're joined on it by Adrian Gallagher, the IFA National Sheep Committee in Donegal. And I suppose it is that time of the year, and it's a conversation we have at least once a year, and for good reason, and that is about the dog control, effectively, particularly in the context of worrying sheep. How come we have to talk about this every single year, it seems?
Yeah, Greg, you're right, actually. It is something that we've been... something we have been discussing and have been on here before with yourself, and I suppose I really appreciate the airtime you get, and it's really critical that we get the message out there that I suppose the key message is it's not your dog's fault, it's yours, you know. And being as a dog owner and as a dog owner myself, we have full responsibility of the whereabouts of our dog at all times, you know. So I suppose you're asking me why we're here for year in, year out. I suppose it takes time and government and government policy to get policy in place to maybe try and entice people to abide by the law. We're trying to get a more rigid law. I suppose at the moment we're looking for a single national database, which would mean that every dog in the country would be registered to an owner and microchipped and licensed. You know, so there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes by the government, and I know they are working on it and they're making progress. But I suppose in the meantime...
But just in relation to that one proposal, I doubt we actually have a figure as to how many dogs that are responsible for this type of activity aren't chipped or don't have a license. You know, we don't really have that information as such. And I'm sure there's lots of, in inverted commas, responsible dog owners whose dogs are worrying sheep.
Well, there is in some instances we do come across dogs that have been put down that are microchipped. But we might find out then once they're microchipped, they're not actually registered on a database. So we don't have an actual legal owner for them, even though we know who owns them. But if we to go on and stand in front of a judge and court, then you don't have a registered owner, I suppose. And this is where we're trying to close that loophole to ensure we have a legal owner for that animal. Like, you know, I mean, all my flock, all my sheep are, all the cattle in the country are electronically tagged and they're registered to a farmer or to a registered owner, I would say, you know. So it's the same here for the dogs. Like, you know, it's really important that we get all this. Plus the fact that we know then how many dogs are in the country. And, I mean, it can be self-sustained then by, I mean, the current licensing that's out there. Like, you know, it'll be all self-sufficient. Like, you know, if everybody pays their dog license, you know. Those are the key messages here. Now we're starting to lamb in here. You probably get about a million and a half lambs born between last week and the next 2 or 3 weeks. The farms are busy. There's young lambs out in the field. I mean, dogs are going to see these young lambs and they're just going to think that they're something to play with, you know, and you skip into them, like, you mean, and in worst case scenarios, it can cause death and injury to sheep and lambs, you know. So we're just trying to get the message out there to avoid people that have dogs. To avoid areas, going into areas that are uplands or farmlands and where there may be sheep ahead of them or sheep in fields on as they walk along, you know.
But to be clear, and maybe it is common sense, but you know yourself what they say about common sense. I mean, obviously, know where your dogs are at night in case they leave the house, you know, meet up with other dogs and attack sheep, etc. But then it gets a little bit grey in terms of walking your dogs in rural Ireland or dogs on, say, for instance, greenways that pass between fields or what have you. I mean, is having the dog under effectual control on a lead walking past a field with sheep in, that's okay, surely, isn't it?
Yeah, that would be okay, actually. Yeah. If you control your dog, you're in control, actually. You are being responsible, you know. I suppose it's when you go beyond that, then actually I would say if you're heading into an area where there's livestock and the dog's off its lead, then you're running a risk there then if the dog skipping in through the gate or skipping in through over the fence, like, you mean, again, and chasing the sheep, like, you know. I mean, so that's just where I suppose the common sense, as you say, a lack of common sense from dog owners arises, you know. So that's the key message to get out, to try and be responsible. Like, you mean, you have an animal here, you have to be responsible for it, like, you know. I mean, and it's not, I mean, farmers can't be picking up the pieces afterwards. I mean, the mental stress and the financial loss here is running into thousands here, like, you know. I mean, week in, week out, we'll have a sheep killed in Ireland, you know. On average last year, I think it's according to this report, so there was a minimum of 10 sheep killed every week last year, you know. You know, that's a lot. I do believe that them figures are actually on the lighter side. You know, I mean, because not all reports are dog kills or sheep kills are reported to the department. You know, so at the moment that's just the statistics that are out there. So it's 10 sheep every week killed by dogs. Like, you know, I mean, so irresponsible dog owners in my eyes. Like, you know, so it's just key to get the message out there. You know.
Yeah. So obviously, if a dog causes injury to a lamb or a sheep, that's pretty obvious, right? But when we talk about worrying or going in amongst the animals, what is the consequence? Why is that so damaging to these animals?
Well, I suppose this time of year now, you have all the sheep, they're heavily pregnant. I mean, they're in the process of just either going to lamb or going to lamb the next 2 or 3 weeks. You know, so any frights or any disturbance at that point, at that time of year, I mean, can cause abortions and can cause sheep to miscarry lambs, etc. You know, so the cost, even though the sheep may not be killed in that incident, means she could potentially abort her lambs, I mean, which is what the farmer's trying to produce at the end of the day, like, you know. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a kill in this time of year to cause significant losses to a farmer, you know. So just to be responsible, I think, is a key message to be out here, you know.
Yeah, and finally, I mean, obviously, if everyone was responsible in terms of the dog ownership, you wouldn't need to be on this morning calling for stricter regulation, because effectively it's about punishing or finding those responsible and them having to pay being the discouragement, really, effectively.
Well, that's at the moment, I mean, we've tried the other options for years and years, and so now we're at the process where we're going to have to try and manipulate and change legislation around a little bit to try and have the options there for farmers to go down that road. Like, you know, and if you look at the other countries across Europe, and particularly in Scotland or Wales, I mean, there's serious legislation in there and serious fines in there for sheep boarding or sheep kills, like, you know, so. And that option's there for the Irish government too, if they want to enforce that and bring that in, you know. So I think we will try the education perspective first and try and get people to be responsible and to pick it up from there, you know.
Okay, well, listen, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much indeed for your time. That is Adrian Gallagher, Chair of the IFA National Sheep Committee, Donegal. If you have anything to say in relation to that or anything we've been talking about this morning, 0866 000, that is the WhatsApp and the text number, or give us a call on 0749125000. Well, that's why we leave it on the programme today. We'll be back with you bright and early tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.